Hey, Kate. There is so much debate about green smoothies. And I have one teacher who says absolutely no greens first thing in the morning because the bitter is too expansive. It's going to really derange vata, and she looks at it as being one of the leading causes for, dementia as we get older and so on and so forth, because that bitter taste is just it's too challenging when the Agni is low in the morning. So would you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what I was just talking about really was more in relationship to food combining, as per the question on the forum. As far as green smoothies as a whole, I think when we look at any food trend, and green smoothies is a food trend, I think overall, when I look at trending foods and culture, and I look at what I was raised on, what a lot of people eat in the morning who are just, part of, like Starbucks and a muffin, like coffee and a muffin versus a green smoothie, I'm going for the nutrients. So when I look at it, just take a big step back and see overall the impact on culture and nutrition, I'm all for the green smoothie movement. Now, when we take it to the yogi community and people who have a lot of mind-body awareness, who have a lot of constitutional awareness, who are eating a high nutrient diet as a whole, high nutrient, lower calorie diet as a whole, and then we look more specifically in there, what we're going to find is that, you really got to experiment for yourself and figure out what can you digest? Like, what is your, how are you cooperating with your Agni on a more sophisticated and subtler level? And a lot of people, especially people that have more pitta vata, vata pitta constitutions, kapha vata, vata kapha constitutions, it's going to be too cold, and it is going to be too bitter, and it's not going to feel nourishing. And so just, and maybe in the summer it does, and it's awesome, and in the winter it's just, it's like it's hellacious. It's like the worst possible beverage. So just getting the time of life, the constitution, the seasonal, the seasonal wisdom, and listening to the body and feeling that out. I mean, that's how I'm always going to answer this question, is like, you got to figure it out. You have God-given awareness, goddess-given awareness, right, for you to experience and figure out, because that's how Ayurveda has always been. It's always been self-study. And it's always been through introspection and observing, observing your nature, observing the greater nature, and it's also based on Shakti, which is the power of attraction, right? The power of interest, power of desire. And what does our tissue want in day to day to really to notice that and then to act from there? I mean, it's hard because for you guys, I influence you by what works for me, and I try not to do that, but it's going to happen. And same thing with, if you're studying with a vata pitta teacher, their vata pitta, like what they've noticed really works for vata pitta, is going to influence how they teach. As much as they try for it not to, unless they're super, super conscious playing the edge of that not influencing, it probably will. So that's really to me where I would go with it. And for some people, green smoothies are better. They're better digested for people, when it's, maybe they have one before lunch, and they get their greens in that way, and they have it 20 minutes before they have lunch. So that can be a way too of getting a lot more chlorophyll in. The other thing I want to say about it though, and this usually comes up, you've probably heard me say it before, but when we look back, I mean, when we look back at history, history of humans, history of primates, and we look back at the diet, we don't have to look far back. I mean, basically we can start looking like 100 years back, but we can also look a few hundred to a few thousand years back to see that humans were eating a lot more plants. And of those plants, the part of the plant that grows the most prolifically is the leaf. And it has the highest quantity of prana, right? It's got a lot of prana, it's got a lot of nutrients. And if I watch my animals, they go outside in the spring and they start eating greens. They start eating grass. They start, you know, they've nibbled the alfalfa. They start chewing on the red raspberry leaves, not the fruit, right? The leaves. And the amount of leaves that humans used to eat, even if you look at like the Native Americans, you know, like looking at, you know, over 300 types of leaves in their diet. Typical primate, monkey, still to this day in the wild eats, you know, hundreds of varieties of leaves. And most humans I know eat, you know, lettuce and spinach. You know, and if we're lucky, like a handful of sprouts in there a couple times a year. So then when I look at the greater, you know, green smoothie revolution, and what I am seeing, you know, simultaneously is a massive diversification of the kind of leaves. Like people that are more into yoga know to eat their beet greens and to eat their turnip greens and, you know, to eat the little green things on the top of the celery and not just the stalk. And it's this shift in consciousness that to me is getting us much more connected to the plants, which are super stocked with nutrition. The other thing about these leaves is they're really high in mineral content. So their nutrient value, their pranic value, their chlorophyll value, it's huge. So, and let me say one more thing on this. Again, if we look at Ayurveda and how much Ayurveda has changed over time, there's a lot of controversy in this. You know, if you look at teachers like Gabriel Cousins or Shantri Kasera, who are both living foods practitioners and advocates, they're both in Vata Time of Life, and they've both been doing this for over, you know, 20, 30 years. And what, you know, their whole take on it is the more you eat, the more you basically pick leaves off plants and trees and shrubs and put them in your mouth, like the more attuned you get to nature. And the more you get tapped in to the history of Ayurveda, that, you know, this is sort of where we came from. Now, the idea of an Ayurvedic diet being like cooked rice and cooked beans and ghee from a cow, that's a much more recent cultural evolution. And it's much further from the plant. And because of that, because that way of, you know, looking at, I look at sort of, okay, how long did that way of eating, what were some of the daily lifestyles of the people that want this more, you know, cooked rice, cooked bean, you know, using animals for nourishment, even if it's just through, you know, milk to cream to butter to ghee, is that there's different requirements energetically and consciously at different points in time, at different stages of cultural evolution. And what I notice for me is because I work out hard, but I have a pretty, like, I'm not laboring 8 hours a day. I'm not, like, building roads with my body. I'm not, you know, laboring in a factory. I'm not chopping wood and carrying water, right? I'm like standing at a desk talking to you guys. You know, that's more or less what I do for work. So my energetically, my requirements, they have a lot of need for ether. There's a lot of need for me to be able to attune subtly and to connect. So I want that etheric element from the plant much more so than I need physical mass from my body, from meat or from dairy or from cooked beans and cooked grains. Not that I don't have those in my diet. It's just not nearly the, you know, the proportionate degree.
That was a wonderful answer. And what I so appreciate about your teaching is you give such a broad spectrum, it's like this broad spectrum allowance. And of course we have to learn for ourselves, whereas some people are just like, never do this. And I don't really buy into nevers, because I do feel that humans are intelligent for the most part. And like you said, that whole thing of desire and what does the body really, really want? And just framing it in that whole sort of trial and error. Now, I sort of did the raw thing. I just went 100% immersed in raw 2 summers ago. And that was, even though it was summer, it was way, way too much. And so I kind of flipped to the other side of the coin. And it's always going to be a sense of balance when things feel right. So thank you for just reintegrating that and giving, like I said, just such a broad view. And of course we're going to teach what we know works for us and try not to get, you know, too much into that perspective, but it's bound to happen. But you do always remind us that, you know, this is coming from this particular perspective and to check in with your needs and so on and so forth. So that was great. Thank you, Kate.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right. So I'm going to just talk a little bit more about food combining before we go on. And that chart, again, there's a nice little chart of don't eat this, 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 and this with this stuff. It's worth printing that out and cutting it out and putting it in a little pin on your fridge. I should actually make something like this into a pretty cheat sheet for us. I'll do that in the future. What I want you to do is understand this stuff intellectually. So there's a little checklist in your mind. But more so than that, the idea of having a food journal, and let me just I hate food accountability stuff. the inner sort of punk teenage cultural part of me is like, don't make me monitor. But what I want you to keep track of is just what doesn't work. So if you eat something, like that doesn't work, to just write down what the food combination does and then to go back to this chart and just to check it out. Just really to see, like, why doesn't this work? And what kind of pressure does that put on my Agni? And that's really as simple as I would make it. You know, even if you have like something like a mango lassi, like mango and yogurt, and you eat it and you're like, that feels heavy and dense and icky. Or say you have fruit and yogurt in the morning on your granola and you're like, oh, afterwards it does feel like there's a little bit of stomach acid, or it doesn't feel that good to me. Just take note and write that in your little food journal. I mean, it would be a food journal of like what really doesn't work. And you could also, at the same time, have a food journal. Like you can write front to back on one side and back to front on the other side of a little notebook. And on the other side, I love those little moleskin notebooks. Those little, I like them without the lines. I don't know, because I like to draw pictures. But you can write, you know, what doesn't work from back to front, and what does work from front to back, and just start to allow yourself to notice. Because what you're going to find is that it's in the awareness of your Agni that you start to discover your own relationship to the food combining rules. And in that, it's so deeply powerful. Like the whole idea with melons combined with nothing, no other foods do melons combine with. The beauty of this, the beauty of understanding melons from an Ayurvedic perspective, is if you want to flush your system, go for a melon. And eat quite a bit of melon, and it's just gonna move through your system. It doesn't want to combine with anything. It just wants to move. There's a way of understanding food combination with stomach exit time. How long does it take that food to exit the stomach? And what we find is that there's, you know, like I explained before, there's certain times when you want to slow it down, right? If you have really loose stools, you might want to slow down your stomach exit time. So if you're really into green smoothies, you would add the chia seeds or you would add the almonds. You don't necessarily want to put a lot of pressure on the Agni. You just want to slow it down a little bit, make the body have to break down some fat. Pressure on the Agni would be adding some almond milk or some almond butter to it, something that's just a lot heavier, more dense, and difficult to digest. So what you're going to find from this really basic journaling is that you can start to tell that which feels like you still have, and the way that I experience it, is you still have the most clarity in your sushumna. So crown chakra to root chakra, right? We have the basic pole of the body, the north-south pole, the massive energy channel, the biggest energy channel. What in Ayurveda is, you know, your this great channel. And it's mirrored by the digestive tract, which is the Mahavahashrota. So we have the massive, you know, we have the Sushumna, which is the energy channel, which takes precedent over the Mahavahashrota, but the Mahavahashrota is like the great caring channel. It's like the big deal. So we have these two things in parallel. And looking then from the place of the Sushumna, what's going on in the digestive tract, that's where we get more subtle awareness of food combining, of what works for you and your constitution and the season and the time of life that you're in.